welcome to a special Labor Day edition of Local Talk Monday on KHOY Community Radio, where we explore people, stories, events, and places in central Iowa. Thank you for listening. I am Pat Schlarb. I'm your host for the hour, and giving our muchly appreciated KHOY engineer Mike Murphy the day off in recognition of this Labor Day program.
Well, the weather for this Labor Day appears to be another sunny with a high of 81 and going to be warming up later in the week, mid-80s, upper 80s, Thursday, Friday, no rain in the forecast that I'm seeing. So it's going to remain pleasant, and enjoy your Labor Day outdoors if you can.
In recognition of KHOY's 10th anniversary, if you want to hear a story about the blessing of the studio in the Pantorium building at 410 Douglas, when a number of native voices provided the blessing, that's coming up later in the hour. Yet first, let's welcome Dennis Hart with a summary of the news last week from newspapers throughout Iowa.
A mixed report for crops and drought conditions around Iowa. The family of a boy who drowned at Adventureland in Altoona wants millions of dollars from the state. And college football Saturday's return to Iowa in a big way. All part of what made news across the state last week. On the state agriculture front, there was word that drought conditions had worsened in the southeast part of Iowa, where there's been little or no rain, and that the overall areas of drought statewide had expanded in spite of some heavy rainfall in some areas. Rainfall from the southwest part of Iowa to the northeast had eased some dryness there. But in the southeast, only about 10% of the soil had adequate moisture for crops. Meanwhile, crop conditions around the state did improve a bit. The U.S. Department of Agriculture reported that 66% of Iowa's corn crop was rated good or excellent, unchanged from the week before. Soybeans were 63% good or excellent, an increase of 1 percentage point. Also last week, the U.S. Department of Agriculture announced it's sending nearly $22 million to about 110 local and regional lockers and meatpacking facilities in 37 states to enable them to process more livestock and sell their products more widely. Among them are 13 Iowa facilities that will receive a combined total of about $2.5 million to buy equipment, add space, and tackle other upgrades that will qualify them to be federally inspected or inspected through a special state program. That will help them sell their products across the nation. Also last week, word that a nearly $170 million Iowa-based initiative that pays farmers for their environmental efforts will be among the first to win a grant from a new $1 billion Climate Smart Agriculture Program. The Iowa Soybean Association's Soil and Water Outcomes Fund is designed to impact soil and water health in Iowa. Keeping with agriculture, a report last week that a group representing 7,000 Iowa corn growers says it supports efforts to build pipelines that will capture carbon dioxide from dozens of ethanol plants across the state in an effort to reduce the renewable fuel's climate impact. That decision coming from the Iowa Corn Growers Association. Three companies have proposed building hundreds of miles of pipelines across Iowa, which is the nation's leading producer of both ethanol and the corn used to make it. About half the state's annual harvest is used to make the biofuel. Meanwhile, a report last week that a southwest Iowa ethanol plant had been ordered to pay a $10,000 fine for its repeated air emissions of excessive cancer-causing compounds in the last 5 years. Southwest Renewable Energy is just south of Council Bluffs along Interstate 29. The State Department of Natural Resources says the company has failed to properly maintain its air pollution control equipment, which has led to numerous excessive emissions. In another story, the first confirmed case of the West Nile virus was reported in Iowa late last week. The virus was detected in a middle-aged adult between the ages of 41 to 60 in Buena Vista County. Most people with West Nile do not develop any symptoms, but about 20% do, including headache, body ache, joint pains, vomiting, diarrhea, or rash. Also last week, state officials lifted a warning against swimming at a northwest Iowa beach. Formerly, big concentrations of toxins and bacteria in its water had gone down. Previous tests by the State Department of Natural Resources had unhealthy amounts of blue-green algae toxins at Crandall's Beach at Spirit Lake, along with the highest concentration of E. coli bacteria the department had detected at a state beach this year. On the coronavirus front last week, federal regulators approved two new vaccine mixtures that are thought to be more effective at preventing serious illness for currently circulating coronavirus variants. The U.S. Food and Drug Administration authorized two variations of the Moderna and Pfizer vaccines. The Moderna booster will be available to vaccinated adults. The Pfizer booster is intended for those 12 years old and older. Meanwhile, the Iowa Department of Public Health reported 4,908 new confirmed coronavirus cases last week, or an average of 701 a day. That was a modest increase from the week before. 265 coronavirus-infected people were hospitalized last week in Iowa, one more than the week before. And 33 more coronavirus-related deaths were reported, bringing the total death count from the coronavirus to 9,940 in Iowa since the pandemic started. Also last week, word that Iowa will soon have three health insurance companies to help run its Medicaid program. The State Department of Health and Human Services announced the intent to award managed care contracts to two winning bidders, Amerigroup Iowa and Molina Healthcare of Iowa. Iowa Total Care now holds a managed care contract with Iowa that lasts through 2025. Starting next year, these nonprofit companies will help manage the joint federal and state program that finances about $7 billion a year in health care for nearly 790,000 Iowans with lower income or disabilities. There will be no immediate changes for Iowa Medicaid members with the announcement. Medicaid members will be distributed among the three insurers as equitably as possible. And last week, word that Iowa had detected its first outbreak of a deadly disease that infects rabbits, for which there is no vaccine and no known cure. Rabbit hemorrhagic disease virus 2 was confirmed in Story County. The Iowa Department of Agriculture did not identify where in the county it was detected, but said the rabbits were domestic and not part of a commercial herd. Though the disease is lethal to rabbits, it does not affect humans or livestock. In its most acute form, it can kill rabbits within 12 to 36 hours after symptoms appear, such as bleeding from the mouth, nose or rectum, fever, and difficulty breathing. There was also word that the family of a Marion boy who had drowned at Adventureland last year is seeking nearly $100 million from the state for letting the ride the boy was on operate in spite of serious safety problems. The family of 11-year-old Michael Jaramillo alleges negligence by the state's Division of Labor was the proximate cause of the boy's drowning on the raging river ride and the injuries to other family members. The claims will automatically trigger an investigation of the state's role in the accident by the Iowa Attorney General's office. Also last week, a Polk County judge dismissed a lawsuit against Governor Kim Reynolds filed by former State Department of Human Services Director Jerry Foxhoven, who was fired 3 years ago. Foxhoven had filed the suit after alleging he had been wrongfully terminated because he had refused to engage in illegal activity. The judge found no evidence of wrongful termination and said that he had served at the governor's discretion. Also last week, word that a Des Moines man who says he was improperly restrained by police after having a seizure 3 years ago will not get any relief from the federal courts. Nick Templeton had sued the city and three police officers, alleging they used excessive force after he had suffered a medical issue while driving and drifted off the road. The city had the case moved to federal court and asked the judge to grant summary judgment to the city, arguing the officers had not violated Templeton's rights, and that even if they had, those rights had not been clearly established by prior case law. The court has agreed with the city's argument and granted the officers qualified immunity on all federal law claims. In another case, a federal court ruled that an Iowa woman who had to have her hip replaced twice can keep the $3.5 million jury verdict she won from the maker of the first device. Lori Nicholson of Fort Dodge underwent two hip surgeries, one in 2007 and another one 4 years later. She sued the maker of her first replacement device and won. Now a federal court of appeals has decided the company that made that device, Biomet, had rushed it to market in spite of warnings it might not be safe for patients. In the world of business last week, word that Wells Fargo & Company would lay off more workers in the Des Moines Metro, 75 more workers to be exact. Those layoffs will be in Ankeny, Clive, Des Moines, and West Des Moines. That will bring the total number of local Wells Fargo workers who have lost jobs this year to 366. It's the ninth round of layoffs since April for Wells Fargo employees in the Metro. The company blames a downturn in mortgage originations. There was also word last week that the IMAX Theater in downtown Des Moines would not reopen. This coming 4 years after the theater at the Science Center on West Martin Luther King Parkway was closed when it was hit by floodwaters. That storm caused millions of dollars in damage to the theater's specialized equipment and led to a lawsuit over insurance claims. In another story last week, word that Allegiant Air, which is one of the biggest carriers out of the Des Moines International Airport, ranked last in on-time departures out of the 6 airlines operating in Des Moines. Allegiant ranks in the middle of carriers in flight cancellation in Des Moines, with Frontier and American Airlines having canceled the largest percentage of flights of all carriers since January. Allegiant says its troubles were caused by aircraft that arrived late into the airport, and maintenance and crew problems. And finally, in the world of college football, Iowa style this past weekend, Iowa State University won its opening game of the season 42-10 over Southeast Missouri. The University of Iowa defeated South Dakota State 7-3. And the University of Northern Iowa lost to Air Force 48-17. And that is your summary of the week's news from all around Iowa. I'm Dennis Hart. Thank you so much for spending this Labor Day morning with Local Talk. There's plenty more good programming still ahead on Local Talk and throughout the day and evening on KHOI, including Capital Week tonight at 7. That's when Laura Bellin and I will get together live on this holiday to bring you the latest from the world of state politics and what it all means. Then I'll pay a return visit to Local Talk this coming Friday morning when I'll report on what's been making news around Ames. I hope you can be here for all of it, and I hope you have a safe, healthy, and happy week.
I dreamed I saw Joe Hill last night, alive as you and me. Says I, but Joe, you're 10 years dead. I never died, said he. I never died, said he. Copper bosses killed you, Joe. They shot you, Joe, says I. Takes more than guns to kill a man, says Joe. I didn't die, says Joe. I didn't die. And standing there as big as life and smiling with his eyes, says Joe, what they can never kill, went on to organize, went on to San Diego up to Maine, in every mine and mill, where working men defend their rights, it's there you find Joe Hill, it's there you find Joe Hill. I saw Joe Hill last night, alive as you or me. Says I, but Joe, you're 10 years dead. I never died, said he. I never died, said he.
Thank you, Dennis Hart, with your week in the news. And yes, have a safe, happy, and healthy week. And the music interlude was I Dreamed I Saw Joe Hill Last Night by Joan Baez at Woodstock 1969. I Dreamed I Saw Joe Hill Last Night is a folk song named after labor activist Joe Hill, which was originally written in a poem by Alfred Hayes in 1925, and composed into music by Earl Robinson in 1936, Joe Hill, a member of the Industrial Workers of the World, passed in 1915. I dreamed I saw Joe Hill last night, alive as you or me. And from the archives, here's a Greta Anderson interview of Colin Gordon with a very redeeming message for this Labor Day.
Here's Greta Anderson and Colin Gordon of the Iowa Policy Project.
Now, I know you want to enjoy your Labor Day holiday, but it's important to remember that low-wage workers are the backbone of this country. In fact, while the mid-wage workers enjoy this holiday, many low-wage workers are still on the job, selling you the supplies or providing the services to make your day go smoothly. So, this piece is for them. It's a recent report from the Iowa Policy Project, headquartered in Iowa City. I'm talking with Colin Gordon. He's the author of Stolen Chances, Low-Wage Work and Wage Theft in Iowa, a paper released by the Iowa Policy Project. And Colin is a professor at the University of Iowa in the History Department. Colin, what is the gist of your report?
Well, the report follows up on a 2012 report that we did on the scope of wage theft across Iowa. And what we've done in our current report, in the update, is to both flesh out those results of a survey of 300 low-wage workers in eastern Iowa, and also by placing the problem of wage theft in a sort of broader context of the sort of shifting quality of jobs in the last generation.
Okay, tell me about this survey of 300 wage earners in eastern Iowa.
We cooperated with the Center for Worker Justice to do a door-to-door, what's called a convenience sample survey, just to get a sense of the experience of workers, both of their current employment and over the employment that they had over the last 12 months. So there were about 80 to 90 questions in the survey, and it asked workers about the ways in which they were paid, any instances in which they were unpaid or uncompensated for overtime, or, you know, had their tipped wages stolen, that sort of thing. And also asked them more broadly about their employer, the industries in which they worked, the sectors of the economy in which they worked, so that we could look across the survey and see where the problem of wage theft was most prevalent in terms of, you know, what demographic of workers, but also what parts of the economy.
And what did that survey find?
Well, we found a number of things. I mean, in a general sense, it confirmed our existing sense of the scope of wage theft. So about a quarter of the workers that we surveyed reported in the last year an instance wage theft, which could be overtime that was unpaid, a paycheck that wasn't paid, improper deductions from a paycheck, that sort of thing. And for workers who did suffer this, the cost varied. Sometimes it was quite small, but it could be as high as a couple thousand dollars a year. It was an ongoing problem with an employer. We also found, much to our surprise in the survey, that many of these workers faced not just problems of wage theft, but what we characterize sort of as a broader problem of precarious work arrangements. So in some instances, or in many instances, they didn't know their schedules from one day to the next. They couldn't count on a 40-day week. And much of this occurred because about a quarter of the workers that we surveyed actually found employment through temporary hiring agencies. So even if they're working in what we would consider the sort of core of the middle wage economy in manufacturing, almost all of that employment was handled by a temporary agency.
How does that work?
Well, I mean, I guess the easiest way to understand it is to contrast it with conventional employment. So if you have a manufacturing firm, conventionally, you know, a generation ago, they would hire a worker. And that would represent something of a commitment to that worker. So after 6 months, they'd be vested in a pension. You know, maybe after 3 months, they'd be on the company's health care plan. They would, in all likelihood, belong to a labor union. So they'd have seniority rights and grievance rights and some assurance that they could move up within the firm over time and that their pay would increase over time with seniority. So that's, you know, I would characterize it as a sort of old model, or my father's model of employment. With it, what the temporary agencies do for big manufacturing firms is they basically relieve them of all those responsibilities. And so they charge the firm a premium, and so they might charge them $15 or $20 an hour per worker. But in exchange, the manufacturing firm gets complete flexibility. They have no other commitments to that worker in the form of, for example, health and pension benefits. And they have no obligation to give them work on any particular day. They might just go to the hiring agency and say, things are picking up at the plant. We need 40 workers on Monday, 20 on Tuesday, and, you know, and 20 on Wednesday. And so what this yields for the individual, for the employer, it gives them, you know, a very sort of lean employment model with very few long-term commitments and fairly low costs. But for the workers, it means, you know, really rampant insecurity, not knowing your wages from one day to the next, and having very little of a sort of, you know, private safety net in the form of health and pension benefits to fall back on.
Right. Now, when you say you did this survey door to door, can you explain that a bit more? Are these residences you knocked on?
Yes. Yeah. So it's the surveyors from the Center for Worker Justice used the survey instrument to go through, you know, what I would characterize as low wage workers' neighborhoods, trailers, parks, apartment buildings, that sort of thing. And the reason I call it a convenience sample is it's not a scientifically based sample of all workers in Eastern Iowa. We're particularly trying to pick out low wage workers now from what their experience is.
Right.
So what we're able to draw from that is a sense of what it's a large enough sample so we know we have a strong sense of what the experience of low wage workers in Eastern Iowa is.
And this was actually in Johnson County, which could be comparable to Story County in that it's the home of a major state university.
Yeah, although, you know, very few of our respondents had any relationship to public employment. I mean, most worked in restaurant service industries, manufacturing, landscaping, this sort of thing.
Right, but the comparison might be that Johnson County is considered a thriving part of Iowa, and so is Story County, and that we have this base, this good economic base of the university.
Yeah, and so I think in one respect, what that gives you is a very stark contrast between, you know, the middle wage workers and above in a community like Story County or Johnson County, and the low wage workers. That maybe much more so than other counties in Iowa, those workers are really toiling on the margins of the local labor market.
And so what recourse do such workers have if they've been denied their rightful wages, their overtime, or the other deductions that appear on their check?
Right. Well, they really have, there's really, in a sense, three things that they can do, none of them ideal. The first two are to lodge a complaint with either the state of Iowa, the Wage and Hour Division of Iowa Workforce Development, or with the Department of Labor Wage and Hour Division in Washington, and which has local offices as well in Cedar Rapids and elsewhere in Iowa. Now, the reason there are two jurisdictions is because different workers are covered under the state and federal statutes. There's a lot of overlap, but, for example, Iowa has no overtime law. There's no statute in the Iowa Code that mentions overtime or what workers are entitled to if they work more than 40 hours a week. So if a worker has an overtime claim, they have to go to the Department of Labor.
Right.
Whereas for minimum wage violations, they could go to either. And there are some workers that are covered under the state but not under the federal, and vice versa. The exemptions and the eligibility vary. And, you know, what the bottom line is that it's quite complicated for workers to know what to do. And the complaint post procedure, particularly in Iowa, is very cumbersome. And so considering the fact that the workers, and in some respects the employers who are engaging in these practices, are sort of on the margins of the economy, it's often difficult to get resolution from a complaint if it takes a year or more to sort of grind through the process. And then the third option that workers have is to just seek relief through the courts, actually to sue their employer for withheld wages. It's very hard to win these sorts of lawsuits. They often resolve to a sort of he said, she said kind of dispute. And the downside for workers is if you pursue a private action that is a lawsuit, then you're barred from using the state compliance machinery. You have to pick one or the other. You can't do both.
And what happens to employers if a complaint is verified and the employer is found to be guilty of underpaying the worker?
Well, under the Iowa and the federal statutes, unfortunately, all the employer is liable for is the wages they didn't pay.
There's no penalty.
There are no systematic penalties. And so, as you know, labor law lawyers have argued for a long time, there's actually a substantial incentive to try and get away with it, because the worst, you know, that can happen to you is 3 years down the road, you have to pay the wages you're supposed to pay anyway. So one of the reforms that Senator Volcom and others have tried to sort of push through in the last three sessions in our wage and hour law is more of a routine civil penalty, or double the wages owed or something like that, to remove that sort of that perverse incentive.
Right.
Now, a worker pursuing private action through a lawsuit can win higher damages, but it's very rare.
And I understand that in some smaller jurisdictions, such as Polk County and Des Moines, there are ordinances in place that prohibit contractors who have records of wage theft from gaining government contracts.
Yeah, that's another form of leverage. And, you know, in fact, I mean, I would say that the state of Iowa has a sort of mixed record on this, because our wage and hour statute is actually quite strong. The problem with it is not the letter of the law, but the fact that we don't enforce it. So there are virtually no resources at the state level for enforcement of wage and hour laws. Some teeth can be given by local ordinances if they have, as in the examples you cited, sort of riders on local contracting saying, if you've been found guilty of a wage theft violation, or, you know, and they often include things like environmental damage or other sorts of findings against you, then you're barred from, you know, contracting with the city or the county for a certain period of time. And those sorts of prohibitions can be effective as well.
Are there large corporations that are doing this kind of thing to workers?
Yeah, it's a good question, because it's really a mixed record from the business side. Because on the one hand, it's a prevalent practice among what I would call marginal employers, like very small landscaping firms that might come and go, or fly-by-night contractors in the construction industry that might, you know, register with the state in order to bid for one drywalling job and then disappear. So certainly, you know, where employment is marginal, and think of the example of day labor, if, you know, you just pick someone up in the Home Depot parking lot to come paint your fence, certainly those sorts of circumstances are rife with wage theft. But it's also important to note that low wages and sort of systematic forms of wage theft are really a business model in some parts of the economy, and particularly in restaurant industry, where, you know, workers are routinely asked to clock in and out when the restaurant is not busy, or to are not paid for time that they spend after their working shift, not paid for break time and things like this in violation of the law. So we see, if we look across the compliance data, across the reports that are made to state and federal agencies, that in some respects, the numbers are driven up by these sort of small marginal firms, but they're also driven up in entire sectors where it's almost sort of a business model to drive wages down as much as possible.
I can't remember what firm it is, what corporation it is that pays their workers in plastic cards.
Yeah, that's another practice we looked at. I mean, it's not an uncommon practice to pay workers with debit cards, and it's not illegal to do so, but it's often accompanied by fees that are attached to the cards, or it's often unaccompanied by proper deductions made from the paycheck. So workers paid with a debit card are often just given a piece of plastic at the end of 2 weeks, and they're not either... the proper deductions for taxes and Social Security and things like that are not made, or in many cases, they're just not notified of the fact that they're made. They're not given a conventional pay stub, so it becomes very hard for them, you know, to keep track of their Social Security record or to you know, reconcile taxes come April 15th.
So your paper concludes with some recommendations?
Yeah, and you know, as I said earlier, I mean, I think the core recommendation is just to enforce the laws that we have with a little more vigor. I mean, our experience with wage and hour laws, both at the state and federal level, is that, first of all, you need an adequate enforcement staff. And the state of Iowa has less than one full-time wage and hour investigator, and that's been the case for a long time. And that's for, you know, a million-plus workers in the private sector. And so the fact is that, you know, wage complaints just pile up in Des Moines. You can't keep ahead of them. So that's one problem, to staff the enforcement agency. The second thing that we recommend is to not just be passive about it, not have a state agency that just receives complaints, but But you can actually be proactive about industries that you know are problems. You can do audits of industry practices and go out in the field and enforce wage and hour laws. This is, for example, what the Iowa Misclassification Task Force did with great effect in the construction industry, where the industry was getting by with, you know, by misclassifying workers as independent contractors and not giving them Social Security or Medicare or taking their taxes properly. And, you know, a proactive investigation of the industry led to, you know, a fairly dramatic change in practices. And so we would like to see, you know, more of that in other industries where these practices are prevalent.
Okay. And possibly putting a penalty in place for that perverse incentive that you described.
Certainly, certainly, yeah.
Anything else you'd like to add?
I mean, the one other thing that I'd like to underscore is, you know, when we do work like this, there's often a sort of knee-jerk reaction that it's anti-business or that we're putting a burden on business that it can't afford in these tough times. And, you know, our experience is, in talking to business people, that's a skewed perspective. If, again, we look at the example of the misclassification task force, our sense is that responsible employers really want these laws enforced because, you know, they're put in the position of competing with sort of low-wage bottom feeders who can outbid them because they're breaking the law. And so a higher floor of both sort of wages and enforcement standards would not only help workers, it would help our responsible business owners as well.
Okay. Thank you so much, Colin Gordon, for sharing these results with us, and you have a good day.
Great. Thanks very much.
And thank you, Greta Anderson, for that report with Colin Gordon
of the Iowa Policy Project.
And you're listening to KHOY Community Radio on 89.1 FM, and I'm Pat Schlarbaum, your Monday Local Talk host. Our engineer, Mike Murphy, is away today in recognition of this Labor Day. And as I mentioned earlier, later in the hour, we will play a special recording when Native folks came and with drum, song, and prayer blessed the station's new studio there at 410 Douglas in 2014. So let's have some iconic voices of the backbone of our great nation and honor all the workers that make America what it is today. Here's some Labor Day music.
Which side are you on, boys? Which side are you on? Which side are you on, boys? Which side are you on? They say in Harlan County there are no neutrals there. You'll either be a Union man or a thug for J.H. Blair. Which side are you on, boys? Which side are you on? Tell me, which side are you on, boys? Which side are you on? My daddy was a miner, and I'm a miner's son. He'll be with you fellow workers until this battle's won. Tell me, which side are you on? Which side are you on? Sing it! Which side are you on? Which side are you on? Oh, workers, can you stand it? Tell me how you can. Will you be a lousy scab or will you be a man? Which side are you on? Which side are you on? Tell me which side are you on? Which side are you on? Good news to you I'll tell.
Union has come in here to dwell. Tell me, which side are you on, boys? Which side are you on? Tell me, which side are you on, boys? Which side are you on?
And of course, that was our beloved Pete Seeger. Which side are you on, boys?
From the high Canadian Rockies to the land of Mexico, city and the country, wherever you may go. Through the wild and windy weather, the sun and sleet and rain, comes a whistling through the country, this farmer labor train. Listen to the jingle and the rumble and the roar. She's rolling through New England to the West Pacific shore. It's a long time we've been waiting now, she's whistling round the bend. Roll on into Congress on that farmer labor train. Jacks and teamsters and sailors from the sea. There's farming boys from Texas and the hills of Tennessee. There's miners from Kentucky, there's fishermen from Maine. Every worker in the country rides that farmer labor train. There's warehouse boys and truckers and guys that skin the cats, men that run the steel mills, the furnace and the blast. Through the smoky factory cities or the hot and dusty plains, and the cushions there crowded on this farmer labor train. Listen to the jingle and the rumble and the roar. She's rolling through New England to the West Pacific shore. It's a long time we've been waiting now, she's whistling round the bend. Ride on into Congress on that farmer labor train. There's folks of every color and they're riding side by side in the swamps of Louisiana and across the Great Divide. From the wheat fields and the orchards and the lowing cattle range, and they're rolling on to victory on this farmer labor train. This train pulled into Washington a bright and happy day. When she steamed into the station, you could hear the people say, there's that farmer labor special, she's full of union men, heading on the White House on the farmer labor train.
And Woody Guthrie on the farmer's labor train. And to recognize the 10th anniversary of KHOI, in 2014, a native chief of the Yankton Nation, Lauren Zephyr, Chief Golden Light Eagle, came to the studios that had been newly constructed and provided our listeners a blessing of that studio. Here's the chief, Golden Light Eagle.
Choka ka ho ye ya ho ya. My brother here to come and share this moment as well. He usually has a message for everyone, you know. So this is his name is Good Voice.
Good Voice.
Good Voice.
Welcome, Good Voice. You do us a great honor by being with us here today, and we thank you.
Okay. There is a story told by the ancients, a legend of rebirth. And in the telling, there is a saying that fell from the mouth of a star who came to Earth. Resurrection is never easy, transition hard enough. When gods play like angels, tears and laughter collide, sending out sparks of blood that flow down into the open throat of the waiting volcano, that sleeping, dreaming, restless inferno, the goddess mother of all creation, this overwhelming cauldron of breathless love. On the slopes of that sleeping volcano, alive in the feelings of our ancestor believers, sitting back to back with the terrestrial weavers, ancient singers bring threads of song into relief for the restless sleepers, who awake with the sound of lonely freedom to walk into a world of hard beauty, where the only direction given that can be taken comes through the birthing of songs and the unfolding of dreams. Water cleanses this earth. Rocks purify water. Fire releases the stone. Myth returns to memory. Memory becomes mist in the morning light.
I know everybody wants to give a little.
Good Voice. Good voice.
And
thank
we also
you.
Have one of our elders here from the circle that. Usually has a message for everyone as a collective as well. So I want to ask my sister to come and share with us whatever her heart desires at this moment. And she works a lot with the waters, you know, from that the original energy of water from way back, you know, when it was so pure. Not like the way it is today, but the spirit of the water that flows within us, you know, because that's what we are. So this is her name. She comes from the energy and the spirit of the water.
Aiya. This my daughter. Wunchi mini woshoni hihana washdewi. This is what this one is called. Grandmother, beautiful, ancient, living waters woman. The grandmothers and the ancient ones want you to know that you are all water. And in harmony, it is what you need to do to bring yourselves together, to flow with the liquid love and light of Creator. There is no differences amongst you. You two-legged ones have diversified yourselves and separated yourselves and forgotten your sacred purpose in life. So it is time, my children, that you unite your hearts and feel the peace of love that is in your very beings. Know that without love, you will only have chaos. Remember the children of the world. You are one of them. But think and look forward to the children's 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 children, children, children. For generations to come, If you plant, nurture the love in your heart, you are all spirit beings. You came to experience your humanness, but your spirit lives forever. It is time that you find, go into yourself, honor the waters, honor yourself, heal yourself. As each of you heal yourselves around the world, it will ripple out. And a new, healthy, green, flowing, beautiful, clear waters will be recreated on Mother Earth. Many blessings. You all have choices. Live and learn through love. Do not live by fear. That will only create chaos. Know that you are loved. All is good. All is in divine order. But it starts within your own heart to heal first and think of other people and what you can do for Mother Earth. Aho metakweasi.
Aho mniwi choni mihana wa stewi hoki da tanka. And I asked my brother here, his name is Eagle Man, to us in our circle, and he is honored by what he's done through his work. So the spirit recognizes him as this man called Eagle Man. And I want to ask him as well, as an elder, as a very beloved brother, to share his heart with at this moment.
And first, I, Takiapi, I feel this is a very important moment, and I don't get a lot of practice at this. So please accept these teeth of the elk, the hardest organic substance in North America. It's hard, but it's for the warmth in your heart that you share with us.
And, well, it is at this time that we always want to express our appreciation not only for each other's companionship, but for all the help that we offer each other. And the help that the Nissens have provided for this place, this destination, is touches all our hearts. And Mr. Rudenberg, in your life, I hope we can see the things that you would like to see occur, that you would like to see us try to bring to Ames, Iowa. And we're listening, and we're fortunate to be here, and we're fortunate for all the board of directors of this station and all the people that are here. I've heard it said that we're all individuals, but we all need a leader. And with that, I'd like to close with a thank you to Ursula. Oh, Mataki Ilyasa.
So through this thank you and Wopila, we want to honor, you know, each and every one of them that you that have had following this dream, you know, to help and share. And whatever it is that Spirit led you to do, we're going to sing a song of thank you before we leave this room. So you can stand, move around, dance if you can. Wakata ka toka shela.
Wakata ka toka shela.
Vila maya elo hey. Charupa wakacha maya tuelo hey.
Vila maya elo hey. We chose.
Thank you.
Thank you.
This land is your land, and this land is my land. From California to the New York Island, from the Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream waters, this land was made for you and me. As I went a-walking that ribbon of highway, and I saw above me that endless skyway, I saw below me that golden valley. This land was made for you and me. I roamed and rambled, and I followed my footsteps to the sparkling sands of her diamond deserts. All around me, a voice was a-sounding, this land was made for you and me. There was a big high wall there that tried to stop me. A sign was painted, said private property. But on the backside, it didn't say nothing. This land was made for you and me. When the sun comes shining, then I was strolling, and the wheat fields waving, and the dust cloud rolling. A voice was chanting as the fog was lifting. This land was made for you and me. This land is your land, and this land is my land. From California to the New York Island, from Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream waters.
Today has been a special Labor Day program, and KHOI is proud to include a hearty thank you to all the laboring individuals that make Ames, Iowa, and the United States of America what it is today, on this special Labor Day commemoration 2022. Local Talk airs each weekday at 7 a.m. on 89.1 FM. KHOI Local Talk is a training workshop as well as a show. If you have an interest in joining the Local Talk team, the welcome mat is out here at 622 Douglas Avenue. Come join the Local Talk team. You can contact us at our website, khoifm.org, or call 515-292-2878, 292-2878. And please remember to support this station financially when you go to the website, khoifm.org, and find the yellow donate button. KHOI provides a platform for citizens and public officials to air opinions and information. The views of our guests do not necessarily reflect those of KHOI. KHOI is community, nonprofit, nonpartisan media. Thank you, Local Talk producer Lynn Carey, and thank you, Dennis Hart, for your Monday report. And thanks to our reporter Greta Anderson and guest Colin Gordon, and from the Yankton Nation, Lauren Zephyr, Mary Lightweaver, and that was Bob Barnhill with his All Nations Drum. And I've been your host for this hour, Pat Schlarbaum. Our theme song, as always, is Backtracking by Tom Richards and Al Harris from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley. The other artists you heard were Joan Baez, Pete Seeger, and Woody Guthrie. This land is your land. Stay tuned for headline news and Democracy Now! And morning masterpieces at 9 a.m. with KHOI's own Paul Hertz. And hoping you have a great Labor Day holiday and a great week, enjoying the birds in your backyard or at your feeders. Remember, you, the listener, are what makes KHOI meaningful and possible. Thank you for listening, and see you again on the radio.